considered a hot take about Big Ten football uniforms. I think we have too many schools whose only colors or primary colors are red and white. And every time they play each other, it's like this team does red top, white bottom. This team does white top, red bottom. And then you both have white helmets. And it looks absolutely atrocious on TV. Every time Nebraska and Wisconsin play each other, it looks horrible. Same thing with Rutgers. Same thing with Indiana. Like, there are just too many red and white teams. There needs to be some sort of stipulation that, like, hey, Nebraska, anytime you play one of these teams, you wear, like, black shirt jerseys, like they used to honor the black shirt defense. Or Rutgers, they have black jerseys. They need to wear black jerseys when they play Indiana or Wisconsin. I think it looks absolutely atrocious on TV.
This is not a hot take at all. And I have had this exact conversation with my dad before. Me and him literally had a conversation about this we were driving from Florida to Michigan together, and we had this exact same conversation. Dad, if you're listening, shout out to you. I'm sure you probably don't remember the conversation because you don't remember what you did yesterday, but I love you. But we have had this exact same conversation, and I'm like, every time those teams play each other, it's like red and white Wisconsin, red and white Indiana, red and white Rutgers, and like, oh, I think that was the conversation that we were actually having. It was around the time that Rutgers was joining the conference. And I was like, great. Another red and white team. Wonderful. Exactly what the Big Ten needed. Not a hot take, a correct take. And I love you for pointing it out because it needs to change. I would love them to do every time they play each other, one of the team wears like an alternate uniform or an alternate color scheme.
I also don't think it helps that Ohio State is scarlet and gray, because gray is somewhat adjacent to white. Not really, but also yes. Let's just make these schools change their colors.
I was lumping Ohio State in there, to be honest.
Ohio State's not as bad because their stripe is so unique, but it does muddy the waters. Like, I was watching the Nebraska-Ohio State game, and I was like, this isn't as bad, but it's very, very close.
And then you got USC in there. Just kidding. They got the gold, so that makes it quite different. But there's just a lot of red. There's too many red teams.
Way too much
in general.
And the teams that we just named, Ohio State, Nebraska, Wisconsin, Rutgers, and Indiana, three of those teams have alternate uniform options. Rutgers has black. Ohio State has a few different combos. And then Nebraska used to have a black alternate. I don't know if they do currently. But you guys remember, I think it was like during the Adrian Martinez era that they wore like a black shirt, throwback jersey. So three of the five have an alternate option, which means we should rarely ever see a game that is red and white versus red and white. It should not happen.
It's confirmed.
You want to know my actual hot take? You want to know my actual hot take? We need more purple.
Good take.
Also not a hot take. It's my favorite.
We got enough purple.
It is purple and black is my favorite team color scheme there is in sports, and it's not particularly close. My
like
favorite.
The Rockies
yes.
are horrible.
Yeah.
But that purple jersey.
Yep. TCU.
Chef's kiss.
TCU's jerseys. The Horn Frog is like, it's incredible. It's unbelievable.
And And they ruined their jersey because they got rid of the horn frog like top. Oh, that jersey was so sick. And they're like, how can we piss off everybody and make us look worse? I know. Let's get rid of the horn frog
cop. Alex, you made a major mistake here because Corey now thinks this is a jersey episode and he's just going to talk for the next 45 minutes.
I'm not going to lie. I saw a reel on Instagram talking about college football helmets, and I almost wanted to pivot this entire episode to talking about college football helmets because some of the takes I heard were absolutely atrocious. Off the top of your head, best helmet in college football, exclude Michigan from the conversation.
You can't say off the top. There's so many that you can choose from. You got to give us like 10 seconds here.
10 seconds.
Ethan, I'm stalling for you. I'm filling the void.
You want me to give you the answer?
I mean, I will say, as much as we hate them, Ohio State's helmet with the Buckeye stickers on it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Stickers don't count. Stickers aren't part of the helmet.
Okay, well, then that helmet sucks.
I don't think stickers should be a part of the helmet.
I know, and it's a rival. It's a rival helmet. Michigan State's all white with the green pattern. Down like
that's cool
down the center and the gruff Sparty on the side.
It's very cool. I don't think it's the best helmet in college football.
Oregon's got great helmets.
Oregon has great helmets, but there's almost too many to pick one as like the best.
There is.
I think the clear number one is Florida State.
Oh yeah, Florida State.
Yeah.
Oh. Their jerseys, that now they changed their jerseys a little bit. The Jameis Winston era jerseys are the best jerseys in college football history, bar none. Don't at me. They are the best ever. Period. So end of story.
We're talking about jerseys. Corey's going to talk about it. Now you're the one talking, goggling all over the Florida State jersey. Okay. Okay, sir.
He's not incorrect, though.
Wondering, if you're listening to this and you're like, what are they talking about? Just look up Jameis Winston, Florida State, and look at those jerseys that they were wearing because they are succulent.
Just look up Jameis Winston highlights and it'll be the most entertaining.
Anyone listening to this is also going to appreciate the helmet and jersey conversation.
Let's be real. He ate a lot of W's at Florida State.
He did.
And crab legs.
Oh. Wow. Oh, and man.
With that, if you love jerseys and you love helmets and you love Big Ten football, you came to the right place. Welcome to Big Banter, everybody. Make sure you follow and subscribe wherever you're listening on Apple or Spotify. Catch us on Twitter at B1G Banter Pod, on Instagram at B1G Banter. We've got a heck of a show because week 9 was wild. We had some skin of your teeth games. The battle for Paul Bunyan against Michigan and MSU was tight. Ohio State had trouble with Nebraska. Penn State, Wisconsin was close for a long time. We've got incredible games to dive into. We will get to all those. We will pick week 10. We will talk about who in the Big Ten still has a shot at the playoff. And do we dare get into some Big Ten championship game tiebreaker scenarios tonight? Maybe. Just maybe. Let's start off with the rivalry game of the weekend. Michigan State travels to Michigan in the battle for Paul Bunyan. And Paul remains in Ann Arbor. Michigan beats Michigan State 24-17. The story of this one was Michigan pivoted once again, their starting quarterback, going from Jack Tuttle back to their original pick, Davis Warren. But it was a little different this time. They did Davis Warren and sprinkled Alex Orji in on certain packages, and it worked beautifully. The offense was as creative as it's ever been this year. Davis Warren was efficient. Alex Orji was effective in the run game. And contrary to what normally happens in this rivalry, the team that outrushed the other did not win. You look at the box score, Michigan State had 163 rushing yards to Michigan's 119. And Nate Carter ran all over Michigan, 19 carries for 118 yards and a touchdown. He was by far Michigan State's best player, but a turnover by Aiden Childs really kept Michigan in this game at halftime. And just some bend but not break performance by the Michigan defense, holding Michigan State to field goals, even getting them out on a fourth down play deep in their deep in Michigan's territory to close out the game. Those were a couple of key plays that this one came down to. Michigan made them. It was an epic, epic game. And we all showed up tonight because Michigan won. If Michigan had lost, we may not be here.
I don't know if that's necessarily true. I was
for me, it was true. For me, it was true.
I was planning on being here no matter what. Excuse the race cars in the background if you guys can hear that going on outside my house. This was one of those games, and I'm interested to hear your guys' take on this, because for me, it felt a lot like Michigan State had a roster full of transfer students and a coach who were not invested in this rivalry to the level which is needed to go into enemy territory and win it, especially when the teams are relatively similar talent-wise. It requires all-out ferocity for 60 minutes to go in and win this game on the road. And it just didn't really feel like Michigan State had that. Obviously, there was a few scrums, you know, throughout the game. What happened at the end of the game, you know, it's now come out that there aren't going to be any punishments. From what I've seen, there was a police statement that said what Khalil Mullings was doing was actually trying to pull somebody off someone else, which checks out because Khalil Mullings is a really, really cool dude, if you've ever heard him talk or been around him or anything like that. But regardless, it just is one of those situations where it just didn't feel like Michigan State got up for this game like they needed to be able to win. And credit Michigan, the two quarterback system. Normally you see the two quarterback system and it's a reflection of you not having one. This was the first game I've seen all season that felt like it had Sherrone Moore's fingerprints all over it. The offense got into a rhythm starting in the second quarter. It felt like every time they put Alex Orji in the game, there was a purpose behind it, and he was running with effectiveness. Offensive line was humming. It just felt like there was more direction for this Michigan offense, which should be encouraging going forward. But I think it does fall back on a lot of things that Michigan State had faults throughout this season. The defensive line play, offensive line play, not being spectacular. However, they were, like you pointed out, really good in the run. It felt like a game that once Michigan grabbed the lead, it was like they put the clamps down. And they never let Aiden Childs out of his cage. They never did. They let him throw downfield one time, and they completed the pass, and they never did it again. So it was a really interesting game to watch from a rivalry perspective, from a lot of different aspects. And I just feel like it showed you that Michigan, even though they won the national championship last year, they're a team who's really, really down this year, still came and showed up for the rivalry, and it didn't feel like Michigan State matched that intensity.
Yeah, Ethan, I like what you were saying there as far as getting up for the game, because it really, the whole reason that Michigan State was always dangerous was because they saved their best and they were the most explosive in this game because of, they were fueled by hatred, right? And I think we felt that a lot when they were, when Michigan State had their golden age and Michigan was down. And then once Michigan State was coming out of that golden age, and then Michigan was starting to get back to where they had used to been, for the course of the rivalry. Because that 10-year stretch was probably the most competitive and the most heated that this rivalry has been, in the D'Antonio and then the beginning of the Harbaugh, era as well. I talked about how moving on from Tucker to Jonathan Smith was going to be a great thing for this Michigan State football program. And it has been thus far. What they've done, they've taken Aiden Childs, who by all metrics, and you watch the kid play, is an incredibly talented quarterback who is young and is going to make mistakes. And that's what's happened. But on the flip side, you come into this game with a winning record. Okay. Yes, it was 4-3. That's a winning record. That counts. And you're rolling with your guy and you're getting him that experience for this rivalry in order to prepare himself for the future, because for all intents and purposes, it looks like Childs could be a guy that's going to be at Michigan State for, you know, the course of his college career because he followed Jonathan Smith.
He looks like the future of that team. No doubt about it.
For sure. Absolutely. And I don't think he would transfer to Michigan State if that wasn't the plan. You said that, you know, Jonathan Smith not being a part of this rivalry really hurt them. And I want to hone in on that because he had not experienced it. He's an outsider coming in from this, right? And yes, he could have the underdog mentality, but like that same like hatred, like even fans were kind of feeling like, okay, Harbaugh's not a part of this anymore. You know, Tucker, you know, in the 2 years that he was there, like still had his guys ready to go. It just kind of seemed like, oh, yeah, Michigan State, Michigan, the crosstown rivals are playing. And it just didn't have that same, like, you know.
Hey, real quick, his comments the week of the game, this is from Smith. He said, yeah, I've been doing a lot of research this week about this game. And Michigan State fans were like, I saw one Michigan State fan account on Twitter posted, and they were like, I will forgive this if they win on Saturday, because it was like, not a great look to be saying something like that the week of the biggest rivalry for Michigan State.
But on the flip side, post game after this, he was like, okay, I get it. Like, I understand now. And maybe that's what it's going to take, you know, but I mean, Michigan State's still in good hands. I think he's the silent, non-chaotic leader that Michigan State desperately needed coming out of the Tucker era. And that's going to help develop this really talented young quarterback. And it's going to get you back into the prominence of what this rivalry once was. But from a fan perspective, ha ha ha, point and laugh. You couldn't even beat the worst Michigan team you've seen in the past 10 years when there was blood in the water everywhere.
I think Jonathan Smith, I think there is something to say about not understanding the rivalry, because you could tell that Michigan emptied the offensive bag for the most part in this game. Like, they ran the trick play with Donovan Edwards throwing a touchdown pass to Colston Loveland. And there were other creative things that they did on offense we hadn't seen all year. And normally, you guys tell me if I'm wrong, I feel like Michigan State was always the team to do that to Michigan. Kind of empty the bag, run some trickeration and weird movements that they don't normally do for the first part of the year. Feels like Sherrone and Kirk were saving that for Michigan State. Now, to Jonathan Smith, not necessarily the rivalry part, but just the in-game management, I thought Jonathan Smith made two extremely critical errors that may have been a significant reason why Michigan State lost this game. Number one, the surprise onside kick. I thought that was the dumbest thing he could have done, because
I liked the call. I liked the call. I thought it was gutsy. I thought it was in tune. I thought that was the only thing that he did the whole game that felt like rivalry to me. I really did.
But you're playing a Michigan team that, do you think they can go 75 yards on you and score a touchdown? Probably not. That's an offense that wants to play the field position game and needs to rely on turnovers to have short fields to score. Now, even though Michigan didn't score on the onside recovery when they had it in plus territory, it flipped field position from there. Like, now Michigan was in the field position advantage from there on out, at least for a short period of time, and Michigan State was no longer in that advantage. Michigan State's the offense that explosive plays, right? Like, Aiden Childs can sling it. Michigan has to prod and dink and dunk their way down the field, and gifting them an opportunity at a short field and changing the field position advantage to me was the last thing you should have done to give Michigan life.
I understand your logic behind it, and I understand your reasoning behind it, and I'm I'm not saying that those are not valid points. To me, it just felt like that was the one time in the game where I was like, oh yeah, okay, he gets it. This is a rivalry. He's like, look, we're gonna make a big splash play here. And
he can't even get the point out. He knows he's wrong.
He's dying. Goodness
gracious.
He knows he's wrong.
I don't feel that way. I feel like it was a play that to me was like, yeah, rivalry game. We're going all out. Like the trick plays for Michigan. It felt that way. And they almost got it. They really did. It bounced off the first guy and then kind of slid back to the second dude. So I liked it.
They were getting called for offsides regardless if they recovered it or not.
Yeah, which that seemed iffy to me too, but whatever.
It did. But the second thing I thought he did, which was a mistake, if you noticed, their second to last drive, the one where they scored a touchdown to make it a 1-point game, they took a lot of time off the clock in between snaps. That touchdown drive took over 5 minutes. And they were consistently snapping that ball.
Under 10 seconds. I was noticing the exact same thing. And I think that's a credit to the crowd. I think my dad and my uncle were at the game. And it felt like one of those crowds where on TV they were kind of drowning it out. They weren't, you know, they weren't amping up the crowd volume. But I mean, look back at the game, look at the highlights or whatever you need to do. Aiden Childs is like walking up to the left side of the line, the right side of the line, pointing out to receivers, like he's having to do everything via hand signal and or getting on top of the guys to tell them what to do. I think that's a huge credit to Michigan's fans making it that hard to hear.
You could be right. What was the last thing I was going to say? So we've been very critical of Michigan's coaching staff up to this point in the season. I think for me personally, this game, I have changed my opinion of the offensive coaching staff 180 degrees. I think the last two games for Michigan, hear me out. I think the last two games for Michigan have been the best they've been coached all year offensively. And I think the offense is a Jimmy's and Joe's issue and not an X's and O's issue. I now believe in Sharon and even Kirk Campbell.
I do think that when you look back at the Illinois film, and they made the point on it, Jake Butt made the point on it, that there was a lot of guys that were open and the scheming was working. It just, you know, the play at the quarterback position, but there's a large portion of it that falls back on the coaches no matter what. And was that their best coached game by far? Yes, it absolutely was. The game plan against USC was just, we're giving up on the pass. We're going back to what we were last year against Penn State, and we just pray that we break one. And Khalil Mullings did, and they won the game. But this was an actual offensive game plan. I can't believe I'm going to save this. Davis Warren looked like a functioning quarterback.
He did look good.
Davis Warren was throwing some ball. I mean, the pass that he threw on that flea flicker was over the underneath defender's head and right where it had to be to not be too high to let the backside defender make a play on it. That pass to me, I was like, that is what I heard in the offseason that he was capable of doing.
He was able to make that one throw too, where he's rolling out of the pocket and he threw across
back
the
across
to Samaj Morgan, yep, for the first down, which dangerous play, but also wasn't in danger of getting intercepted either.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm fine with that. The consensus is, for as bad as the quarterback play was, and again, we're comparing a very, very poor quarterback room, was he threw the best ball out of any of these guys. And I think that you saw it in the Michigan State game. And I think maybe as an offensive player, does that gain you some confidence to know, okay, if this guy can complete a couple passes here and there, then maybe we have a shot to salvage something here with this season.
Well, and I think to your point, Corey, I think from a receiver standpoint, there was a lot more urgency for receivers to get out of their break. It looked like they were intentional about their route running. It looked like there was a much deeper focus from the offensive players, especially the skill position players, because they were like, I might actually catch a ball today. And I know that, you know, that seems crazy to say, but that I do think that had a lot to do with it. So I think that's a very good point. Alex, last word.
Paul Bunyan stays in Ann Arbor, baby. They said it was about the signs. They thought we only won because of Stallions. And you all just suck and can't beat us. And we're the best.
The fact that you sung that, that's going to go down in Big Banter lore right there. whatever just took place. Yikes.
I don't care how the message gets delivered. I want it to ring in East Lansing.
Mm.
Y'all can't beat us. It doesn't matter if we had your stupid signs or not. Your team is just balls.
Yeah, you do suck. I will say that. You do suck. And we beat you. So, have that.
Next game on the docket. Let's go to Columbus. Ohio State beats Nebraska in a nail biter. 21-17. There's a lot to talk about, I feel like, for both teams in this one. There were a lot of moments for Dylan Raiola and Nebraska that, once again, they just find ways to come up short. They did this against Dylan specifically, did this against Illinois, where he missed a wide open touchdown pass late in the fourth quarter to take the lead. He missed a couple of open touchdown passes in this one against Ohio State. Nebraska also got stuffed on a goal-to-go situation from the two and turned it over on downs. And then you look at, you know, if I told you that about Nebraska before the game, you'd think this was going to be the blowout that it should have been. But no, it was not, because Ohio State, 1 of 10 on third down. They punted 5 times. They also gave up the ball on downs, and they missed a field goal. And Will Howard also threw an interception that was almost costly. Both of these teams were a little all over the place. You're more concerned. Well, I shouldn't say you're more concerned. Throwing the question out there. How do you feel about Ohio State?
This is an Ohio State team that preseason, I was confident that they would lose at least one game. And I didn't know who it would be to, but I was like, they're going to lose a game. If you told me right now Ohio State is going to lose 3 games this season, 2 more after the Oregon loss, I'd say, okay.
That's not regular season only. That's including.
No, it is. No, it is not.
So their remaining
schedule is Penn State, Indiana, and Michigan. I know they play another game in there, but out of those 3 games, they're not going to be a 20 plus point favorite against Michigan. That's not happening. The rest of their schedule, they're a 3-point favorite against Penn State. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Vegas doesn't know if Drew Aller's playing or not. If he plays, that could be a pick 'em by the time that game kicks off. This is a team that has, you know what? It's perfect because it's got Ryan Day's identity. It's got his fingerprints all over it. Unbelievable skill position players. the quarterback play, you could argue, is it a little bit better than last year? Sure. Is it what they thought they were getting as far as a step up from last year? Absolutely not. No, it is not. Will Howard has not been that guy. He's not a C.J. Stroud who takes your team and elevates them to another level. He's not that guy. And in the trenches, they've suffered some injuries on the offensive line. They were soft in the offensive line before the injuries happened, and now it's only going to be worse moving forward. Defensive line, same thing. There was multiple plays where, I mean, Dylan Raiola is not known for being a mobile quarterback, and their defensive line just said, screw it, I'm losing all gap soundness completely. And we saw J.J. McCarthy take advantage of that over the course of the two games that he played against Ohio State. And Dylan Raiola did the exact same thing. Ohio State won this game, so I know you're not pushing the panic button. But I am, in the sense that I just think that this is who Ryan Day is. And I think these are the types of teams that he coaches, where interior, offensive, and defensive line, they're just not good enough. This team is nowhere close to national championship ready. This was a national championship or bust team preseason. This team is not winning a national championship. It's not happening. They'd lose to Georgia. They'd lose to Texas. They'd lose to Tennessee if they played them right now. I mean, they might lose to Penn State on Sunday or on Saturday. The direction this team is going, and I understand a lot of people are like, it was a look-ahead spot, blah, blah, blah. No. Well, watch the tape, because Dylan Raiola threw that game over three different offensive players' heads. He tossed it right out the window for Nebraska. He had three wide-open receivers for touchdowns and overthrew all three of them by a combined 268 yards.
Ohio State was also coming off a bye.
Yeah.
So don't give me look-ahead spot. This is the DNA of Ryan Day. And if I was an Ohio State fan, I'd be done. I'd be done.
I've been having a couple different conversations with some Ohio State people that I know, and they're about to enter into the territory that Michigan was about to be in, or Michigan was in for, you know, those years where Harbaugh wasn't getting the job done. Literally, what are you going to do that's going to get you better results than Ryan Day has given you since he has been there? What, they've lost one Big Ten game, not named, or they've lost to one Big Ten team, not named Michigan, over the course of his coaching career there, and they've consistently been competing for a national championship. They've been to the playoff multiple times. They were a kick away from being in the national championship game twice, because weren't they in the national championship against Clemson and they got destroyed? Doesn't matter. Ryan Day, for all intents and purposes, as much as we like to make fun of him, as much as we like to call him soft, has been an exceptional football coach in Columbus. And whether that is because he brings in top tier talent and just does not know what to do with it, I'm not quite sure, but at some point you got to look at the full slate and say, who is going to get us consistently to this level other than the guy that we currently have in house? Like, do you ride with him until he can figure it out, until he can get the pieces in place to get those things going? Because you mentioned the quarterback play. You are correct. The quarterback play isn't better. It's different. Will Howard has an element to his game that Kyle McCord didn't have, and then you could make the argument that CJ Stroud didn't have, is that he is able to run the ball. The fact that they've been doing quarterback design runs or like quarterback counters in the game against Nebraska, I think gave them the upper hand in this game. Yes, it was gross, it was sloppy, but you're gonna have to win games like this. Back to the game, it was bad coming off of a bye week. I think we're all firm believers. If you do not have a great game plan and you do not look good coming off a bye week, you do not feel good if you are a fan. I think give credit to Nebraska's defense. They played really well. I think Jamari Butler was all over the field. I think he had three tackles for loss, and he was essentially keeping the team, or he was essentially keeping Nebraska in the game by just shutting down anything at the line of scrimmage. He was sensational. But you got to beat the softness allegations. But on the flip side, you are still winning consistently double digit win totals per season. What do you do with that? It puts you as a administrator in a very, very difficult spot, because you're going to ask the question that Michigan fans were asking for the past
the problem is, 8 years. The problem is, and let me pose this as a question. Jim Harbaugh had pedigree to fall back on. He was in a spot where he was not succeeding at Michigan. I was calling for his job. I had been for multiple years. Let me make that very clear. Let me make that known. But he had pedigree to fall back on. What he had done at Stanford with Andrew Luck and what he had done in the NFL. It was like he had coaching experience and coaching success at the highest level to fall back on. And he had to completely revamp what he did, the way he constructed the roster, what he relied on, and his complete game plan as far as how he was going to run the team. He changed that during the COVID year. It was ugly, but you saw the change taking place. And then in 2021, it took off, right? Ryan Day doesn't have that. Ryan Day does not have all of those things. He has what he has done at Ohio State, which is time and time again show that when it comes down to winning in the biggest situations, he doesn't come through. And I understand the record against the rest of the Big Ten. I understand the record against, you know, all the lesser teams and all that kind of stuff. At some point, that becomes farts in the wind. And it's like, you know what? I just don't care. And I'm telling you, Ohio State fans and that organization, Michigan puts up with a lot more. It has consistently over my lifetime, the past 30 years. Michigan has put up with a lot more, a lot less success. Ohio State does not do that. If you don't bring ultimate success to that program, and it starts with beating Michigan, you will be gone. So I think we're closer to the tipping point than a lot of people think.
I mean, I agree with you, and I think that's an excellent point that he doesn't have the pedigree, but also you can't just throw those results away. You literally cannot do that because he has consistently been in the conversation for being one of the top teams in America because he has been to the playoffs multiple times. He's probably going to make it to the playoffs again this year, regardless of what happens.
I hear you.
And you have to, maybe you have to have a meeting with the guy and be like, okay, you can recruit talent and you can coach to a level that is elite, but you need to recruit differently now. So instead of getting five-star wide receivers and absolute freaks of nature who are 12 years old, scoring 8 touchdowns in a row in games, okay, you need to go out and recruit the big boys. You need to go recruit the five-star offensive linemen, the defensive tackles. You need to start shifting how you recruit things, kind of like what Michigan did, and shifted their identity and seeing how that's going to work. I think that's the conversation that needs to happen first, not we need to get rid of this guy entirely, because you could send yourself in a tailspin. As a Michigan fan, yeah, do that. Send yourself in a tailspin. But as an Ohio State and football person, I mean, don't turn away from what you've got right now.
I think you guys said a lot. I'm just going to add a few things on top of this. Ethan, I think you pointed out the offensive line injuries. That could be gigantic, especially going into this game against Penn State, who's got a guy like Abdul Carter on their defense who can rush the passer like nobody's business. This was the best rushing defense that Ohio State's played all year in Nebraska. They are 12th in the nation in rushing defense. Ohio State averaged 2.1 yards per rush, and four of their either failed third downs or fourth downs, four of them were 3 yards or less. Those were absolute money downs for Michigan during their national championship run. It was 3 yards or less. If you have to run it twice, you do it. But it is absolutely money that they were getting it every single time. Ohio State doesn't seem to be able to do that. And while their passing defense as a whole is putting up great numbers, like their passing yards per game allowed is in the top 10, the explosive plays are there to be had. Guys are getting beat, and Dylan Raiola wasn't able to take advantage, but if you play a Cam Ward, if you play a Carson Beck, if you play a Quinn Ewers or a Jalen Milrow, that coin could flip. Are we good? All right, let's go to the team that Ohio State's going to be playing this next week. Penn State beats Wisconsin in Madison, 28-13. Drew Aller gets knocked out in this one, but Penn State pulls it out anyways. I thought Wisconsin was winning this game. I'm not going to lie. I thought they were at least going to cover. I thought they would win. They had been playing absolutely fantastic up to this point. You look at the box score, Drew Aller and Pribula almost had the same amount of passing attempts, and they both were as stellar as they need to be. Maybe not fantastic, but they were efficient. Each threw for one touchdown. Catron Allen ran for 86 yards and a touchdown. Singleton ran for 49. This Penn State team is going to survive based on their running game and how explosive it is. That is their bread and butter. That is their fastball. And then the vertical down the field plays come after that. Tyler Warren had 7 catches and 46 yards. Harrison Wallace had 5 for 67. Tyler Warren continues to be just their Swiss Army knife. He had those catches. He also had 2 rushes. What do you say about Penn State? So they go into what looked like was going to be a tough road game, and they handle business even with their backup quarterback. Now comes the test. They are once again undefeated. They are once again going up against one of the big dogs. And now it's time for James Franklin to put up or shut up. This is the game that Penn State fans have been waiting for Penn State to have for years, since Saquon Barkley was freaking there. How do you feel about, we just talked about Ohio State and how there are doubts and questions and everything. One, could you argue that Penn State has looked like the better and more complete team? And 2, who do you have more faith in going forward, Ohio State or Penn State?
You are at home. You're playing, it's a noon kickoff, which, Fox getting the first pick of these games really, really ticks me off. It really does. The only time I like it is when it's Michigan, Ohio State at the end of the year, which honestly I think would be kind of cool to have as a night game. I mean, it kicked off 1 year, the first time they were both 11-0 at Ohio State. It kicked off at 3:30 and ended at night in Columbus. That game ended at night, and it was just an unbelievable vibe. It was so, so cool. Anyway, I digress. If you're Penn State, you're better on the O-line. You're better on the D-line. You are at home. You have seemingly the better run game. I saw a stat that Singleton has more receiving touchdowns than he does rushing touchdowns, which I thought was kind of crazy.
This is this game is going to have 4 of the top 15 to 20 running backs in the country. Like, this is a fantastic running back matchup.
No doubt. No doubt about it. So the biggest thing for me here is the James Franklin bugaboo, right? And it's, can he finally shake that off his back? And if he does, it's going to be in a huge, huge way, because this would catapult Penn State into that national championship conversation, which is a huge if.
We're talking, because you brought up bugaboos, the coaching matchup in this, when you go to their records against top 5 opponents, Corey is nodding his head. He probably saw the tweet that I'm about to mention from College Football Report. Ryan Day hasn't beaten a top 5 opponent since 2022. He's lost 4 straight. James Franklin hasn't beaten a top 5 opponent since October of 2016. He's lost 10 straight, and they both face off in a top 5 matchup this weekend. Both of these coaches and I shouldn't say programs, because Ohio State probably doesn't have the weight of that reputation as Penn State does as a program, but both of these coaches are fighting this perception, the same exact perception of underachieving in big games this weekend.
I'm gonna tell you something real quick that both of you are gonna be like, wow, that is kind of crazy.
The way that you just said, I'm gonna tell you something real quick, just like, yeah, I'm gonna tell you
teams
something.
Teams like Michigan State, TCU, okay, those types of teams. made it to the college football playoff at least once. Penn State never made the four-team playoff. They were more effective. They are the team that are the most affected. Shout out Joel Klatt. The team that is most affected by there not being a 12-team playoff, because they're always good, not great. Under James Franklin, that is the story of their lives. Never going to the four-team playoff in its entire existence is unacceptable for a team like Penn State. Unacceptable. So this is, for me, a crap or get off the pot year for James Franklin. If he loses this game, backdoors his way into a playoff spot, and then loses, say, in the first or second round, you got to start talking about it's time to move on, because he just can't get it done in the big spots. So for me, this game is everything for James Franklin. And I'm not saying that I'm picking them to win. I'll save it for the picks, but this is one of those games where you got to get it done.
I agree, and this is the most important game of the Big Ten season, is it not? This is the game that's circled that impacts mostly everything else. I mean, you can make the argument for Oregon, Ohio State, but even after that game was done, everybody was saying, yeah, we're probably going to see this game again in Indianapolis at the end of the year. But as far as now, the aftermath of everything that has happened, this could keep Ohio State out of the Big Ten championship, which is a big deal. And then this could propel Penn State, as you guys have already mentioned, to the national title conversation. So as far as where these teams, lie in this, Penn State definitely has the advantage of playing at home. And in the games where Franklin has head-scratchingly lost, it's been one possession games because it was in Happy Valley. So you'd have to think fourth time's the charm, maybe, where this streak could potentially end. I don't really know. It's going to be one of those games where you have to wait and see. You're going to have to watch and see what's unfold, because you're leaving a lot more to be desired for this Ohio State team. And you're seeing Penn State play in a way where against a USC where they got down super early, that, yeah, okay, this Penn State team, when there's any sort of adversity facing their way, they're just going to fold like a lawn chair, and they came back and won. Or this game against Wisconsin, it looked like the prototypical trap game. They came back and won despite an injury to their starting quarterback. So are we seeing the trends cross on the chart a little bit here, or are we just going to have history repeat itself and water coming to level? I don't really know. I would say, based off of what I've seen thus far, if Aller plays, I guess I'm gonna finally give Penn State the upper hand, and I would pick them, I think. We'll just have to wait and see.
The if Aller plays question is a big one in terms of how the result of this game is perceived in any scenario. Like, if Aller doesn't play and Penn State wins, that has a dramatic effect on how people perceive Ryan Day in big games and also James Franklin. And if they don't have Aller and lose, then it might just be a wash. Like, well, we still don't really know with James Franklin, or we still don't know if he would have gotten it done this year.
If that's the case, if Aller doesn't play, the onus falls 100% on Ohio State. You have to go in there and take care of business.
It would be house money for Ryan Day and Ohio State if Aller does not.
No, it would be house money for Penn State, because they have every excuse to lose the game.
You're correct. Yeah, I mixed those up. But that has a dramatic effect on how the reputation of these two coaches is perceived after this game is over, regardless of the result.
But doesn't that just speak so well into the James Franklin era? Oh, yep, we're just going to give him a pass.
Yep.
Just because. And then, Drew Aller got hurt, so we're going to give you another pass, big guy. that just fills into the legacy well, right?
I agree. You need Drew Aller to play in this game. I am no doctor. I've never met Drew Aller. I don't know what he's suffered in terms of an injury. But we as a people and as a country need Drew Aller to play in this football game.
America needs this.
America needs Drew Aller to play in this game. We have to know, can James Franklin do it? Is there more pressure on James Franklin because Ryan Day has demonstrated an ability to beat Penn State in big games?
I think it's just more the record against him for top five. I mean, 2016, the world was, yeah. I mean, I was in college in 2016.
I was also in college.
I was like just starting college.
That's outrageous. That's why I'm saying like this is James Franklin put up or shut up year. Make a run, win a game that everybody thinks, oh, this is just another game that James Franklin and Penn State cannot win. This has to be it. This has to be.
Okay, I know that ended up being more of a preview for Penn State Ohio State than actually looking at the Penn State Illinois game, or Penn State Wisconsin game. But I think that was probably a fine way to take that conversation. Wisconsin's been playing good ball. We'll see if they can keep it up. Luke Fickell seems to have those boys going in the right direction. They seem to have an identity for the first time in a while. Last game that we're gonna dive into a little bit here, and we probably can stay in the shallow end of the pool because Oregon crushed Illinois. This was the one ranked matchup of the week in the Big Ten, and Oregon curb stomped Illinois 38-9. This game was in Eugene, but Oregon looks like an unstoppable force. Dylan Gabriel looks awesome running the ball, throwing the ball. They have multiple weapons. Tez Johnson, Evan Stewart, their defense can get after the quarterback. Their defense can turn you over. Luke Altmyer had only thrown one interception, I believe, on the season coming into this game and threw two. This Oregon team looks nasty. They look every bit like the team that we were promised in the preseason. I think they have every right to be the number one ranked team in the country right now because they are playing like a team that has national title in their sights.
I owe Oregon an apology. I said Oregon is overrated. Oregon is blah, blah, blah. I don't even need to get into it. I owe them an apology. Oregon, currently, the way it stands right now, is the best team in the country. And when Georgia plays their best game, I believe that would be their biggest competition. But those are the two best teams in the country when they play their best, in my opinion. And it's not particularly close. That's all I'll say about it.
Yeah, Oregon was on a different level in this game against Illinois. If there's one word to describe it, it would just be overwhelmed. That's what Illinois was the entire time, offense, defense, special teams. I mean, it was a beatdown in every sense of the word. I think we have to really start giving we haven't been like, oh, Dan Lanning is a dumb coach or anything like that. But as far as like savvy goes, especially with the whole thing with Ohio State and the 12th man penalty, like, not only is this guy a good football coach, he's also creative and he's also quite savvy as well. So everything is coming together for Oregon right now and seamlessly in a team that is transitioning from an old conference to a new conference. But I think most of us were in agreement of the newcomers who was going to transition well into the Big Ten game, and it was Oregon. And they are clearly proving that. USC has fallen off a cliff. UCLA sucks. And then Washington just, I guess, maybe TBA for what's ahead for them. But Oregon, you're playing like the best team in America. So keep it up.
It's funny that we just spend so much time talking about James Franklin and Ryan Day and their record against top five opponents and their history in big games. And no matter which one wins this weekend, it may be a moot point because Oregon just might run away with the Big Ten. Like, that is a very real possibility that no matter who we come out saying is the shining star of the Penn State-Ohio State game, Oregon might just be waiting in the opposite corner, ready with a knockout punch.
I will say, if Ohio State gets a second chance at it, in Indianapolis, I would have a hard time betting against Ohio State in a rematch.
No. Oregon's better in all three phases. Oregon played their B-minus game against Ohio State, and Ohio State, I think, played the best that they have played all year in that game, and Oregon still won.
Hope was at home.
It wasn't Eugene. It wasn't Eugene. Indiana beats Washington 31-17. They did this with Taven Jackson at quarterback. Fun fact for Big Ten basketball fans, he's the younger brother of Trace Jackson Davis, who tortured Big Ten teams for a couple of years in Indiana.
Quietly having a solid NBA career.
He absolutely is. So Indiana remains undefeated. They are 8-0. USC beats Rutgers 42-20. Rutgers is heading in the wrong direction, Corey.
Sad Italian noises.
Is that one, two? That is four straight losses for Rutgers after they started 4-0.
They took on the role of Maryland football because Maryland football somehow is not Maryland football anymore, which is not necessarily a good thing.
Right? They're Maryland is old Rutgers, and
they're just
Rutgers
bad.
Maryland.
Yeah, they're just bad.
But they did beat USC. I guess everybody's just beating USC, so who cares?
Everyone beats USC, except for Rutgers.
Except Rutgers.
Iowa 40, Northwestern 14. Iowa keeps scoring like 30-plus points a game, and it's very weird.
Ooh, hold on. I won't take too much time on it, but I have to give you a stat line from this game. Okay, so two quarterbacks played for Iowa, all right, in this game, and I'm going to give you the two stat lines really quick here. One quarterback was 9 of 14 for 79 yards and 5.6 yards per attempt. Another quarterback was 7 of 13 for 73 yards for 5.6 yards per attempt, but he had an interception. Which one was which?
Cade McNamara threw the interception.
He did. It doesn't matter. Guys, it doesn't matter. It does not matter who they put in. They could put in frickin' Tom Brady, and he's going to go 7 of 13 and throw for 73 yards. That position is cursed, and it always will be.
Minnesota beats Maryland 48-23. PJ Fleck rode the boat and absolutely mowed over every turtle in his path while rowing. This Maryland team is god-awful, and the clock is ticking for Loxley, I think, and Fleck may be saving his job in the process.
And no, Fleck's staying. They love him in Minnesota.
I know. That's what I'm saying. I think he's saving his job in the process, but Loxley, I don't know. I would think things are not looking bright.
I have a question that doesn't pertain to that game at all, but I think it's important, and they are now in the Big Ten. So you guys just touched on it a second ago about everybody's beating USC. When can we talk about Lincoln Riley getting fired?
Not this year, but if it happens again next year.
I think we should probably talk about it this year.
I absolutely think we should talk about it this year. We're talking about a team that had playoff aspirations. There was so much hype surrounding that team coming into the year, especially preseason, like a month before the season started. And they are They are on the precipice of possibly not making a bowl game.
So the rest of their schedule, it is very realistic that they don't make a bowl game. They're 4-4. Yes, we can talk about Lincoln Riley getting fired. Not right now because we're already at the 59-minute mark, but yes, in the future, maybe an off-season episode, we can talk about the prospects of Lincoln Riley. Or if they don't make a bowl game, because that would be a gigantic whiff for him. Okay. Because we're already at the hour mark, I do not think we have time to get into tiebreaker status here. in terms of Big Ten championship appearances on the line. But
that picture will be more clear next week, so we can dive into it.
It will be. The Ohio State-Penn State game should help that significantly, especially if Ohio State wins. Actually, that's not even true. It doesn't really matter who wins. We should just get a more clear picture either way. Okay, let's get into the picks. Or, you know what? No, I'll say, okay, AP poll rankings. Let's go through those really quick. Oregon goes from one and stays at one. Penn State stays at three. Ohio State stays at four. Illinois drops from 20 to out of the AP poll ranking. And Indiana is 8-0 and not ranked inside the top 10.
Indiana erasure.
Show me an SEC team who has ever been 8-0, regardless of the schedule that they have played, having already played that many conference games, not ranked inside the top 10. I'll wait.
I also think that Illinois dropping out of the top 25 is ridiculous. They were ranked 20th in the AP poll, went on the road to the number one team in the country, got beat like a team should be, ranked 20th and going on the road to the number one team in the country, and then dropped completely out of the top 25.
Yeah, but that's just how the poll works. That's why, what do I tell you guys every single year? Wake me up when the first CFP poll drops. The AP is, it's useless. It is useless.
I was incorrect. Illinois is 24. They almost dropped out. They are not quite out of the top 25. They are 24. So that's my bad, AP poll. But you should still have Indiana in the top 10.
AP
yeah, you're still dumb.
AP poll, garbage.
Okay, so now let's look at the picks. Ethan and I picked last week. Ethan went 5-3. I went 4-4. So now Ethan is still the leader in the clubhouse. He's 44-31. I am a shade under 500 at 48-49. Corey is 50 shades more under 500 at 38-44.
Corey, you suck.
You had some work to do. You had some work to
do. Well, Ethan's just on the heater of a lifetime.
Here's some big banter trivia. What triggered Corey to start using the coin?
Oh, me.
Go ahead, Alex.
He went 0-for on a week in the picks.
He sure did.
No.
Yeah, you're the only person to go undefeated and to go winless in the picks for Big Banter.
Only person to go undefeated. So here we go. Let's go.
He's got that feather in his cap.
Hey, national. We won a ship. We won the year. So I don't care. I'm the transition from the 2019 LSU Tigers to the 2020 LSU Tigers. That's me.
All right, getting into the picks. Who's going to give me the spreads here? I got to do some typing. Corey, you're going to do it?
Got you.
All right, cool. I am muting myself. You take it away, buddy.
All right, we'll just do this in order. We'll just start with the biggest game of the afternoon. Ohio State travels to Happy Valley for the big noon kickoff, where Ohio State is a 3.5-point favorite. Ethan, you're going to have to go first on this one because Alex already told me he's typing.
Okay, that's totally fine because I'm going to do something. I'm going to take the points while I can. I made the point earlier that if Drew Aller does play, I don't know why I'm doing my Donald Trump hand right now, but I am talking about this.
Do not come.
Do not come. Penn State.
I'm going to come.
Penn State. I'm taking them plus the points. The fact that
he'll be at the game.
The fact that this is perfect. The fact that they're getting 3.5 points. It's outrageous. It's huge.
It's unfair.
They hate me. I'm gonna take Penn State plus the points while I can. I'm gonna trust that Drew Aller plays. I would not currently touch this like in a financial betting situation at all. Just because him playing is a huge, huge deal. I think in the trenches, Penn State is better on both sides of the ball. And you're telling me I get them at home. and you're telling me I get them plus 3.5 points. I just cannot pass that up. Give me Penn State plus the points.
I am taking Ohio State minus the points. Doesn't matter if Drew Aller plays or not. I'm taking Ohio State minus 3.5. Ethan, are you reserving the right to change your pick if Drew Aller plays? Or doesn't play?
If he doesn't play, yes, I am.
Okay. Corey?
I'm going to take Penn State for the sole fact. If it doesn't happen now, it's never going to happen ever. So that's my thought process. Give me Penn State.
Are you reserving the right to change your pick if Drew Aller doesn't play?
No, we'll just roll with it. I'm already in dead last. Who cares?
I love that. I love that from you.
You know what?
All right.
You know what? I'll ride the wagon with him. Put me on that smoke.
Wow.
Put me on that smoke wagon and pull the horse's reins, baby. We are out of here.
He said, I'm going to get my bread up. Said mama didn't raise no wimp. All right. Next game. Minnesota, the PJ Fleck rode the boat up and down the river, travels to the 24th ranked Illinois, Fighting Illini, where the spread, get this, fellas, is Minnesota minus 3. Alex, you take the lead there, buddy.
This is at Illinois.
Yes.
This is.
It is.
And Minnesota's minus 3.
Yes, they are.
Lock of the week, Illinois plus 3. This is insanity. People are being fooled because Illinois lost to Oregon. I'm sorry, Oregon? No, Illinois is a good football team and Luke Altmyer is a good quarterback. This line, sometimes lines don't make sense and you're like, well, Vegas, maybe they know something I don't. No. Illinois is a good football team. Give me the points at home easily.
Thank you for falling for it. I appreciate it. I appreciate you falling another step behind me in the rankings. This is without a doubt a situation. What do you think over the past 10 years, what do you think the win percentage is of unranked teams going on the road and being favored against ranked teams? What do you think their win percentage is against the spread?
I have no idea.
760. Row the boat, baby. Give me Minnesota.
I am just flabbergasted that I heard Ethan say row the boat in a PJ Fleck led Minnesota Golden Gophers team. You know what, Ethan, to your odds and to your stats, I say hogwash. No way. I'm not going to trust this. If there is anything that we have learned over the course of this podcast, is that we are to never, under any circumstance, trust the Minnesota Golden Gophers. Absolutely not. You know what? Illinois might not even win the game. I just can't do it. Well, I'm not gonna do it. Nope. Minnesota. What am I saying? Illinois.
This is a win-win scenario for me, because if Illinois wins or covers or whatever, I just get to be more upset at PJ Fleck. And if I win because I'm picking via what Vegas is telling you. I'm not picking because I think PJ Fleck is good. Let me make that very clear.
Illinois has only lost to two teams this year, and both of them are ranked in the top 3. Like, what are we talking about?
Don't listen to him. It's fine, Alex. All right, we need to keep going. Wow, just a miserable football game. Northwestern, 3-5 Northwestern travels to 1-6 Purdue. The spread is Northwestern minus 1.
This is the part of the show where we give out the number for if you have a gambling problem, please call 1-800-GAMBLER. Please do not bet on this game. The fact that we have to pick it should make you vomit.
Do we have to? Do I have to? I don't want to pick all home dogs. Gross. Northwestern, ew. Sick. Anyone else dare to take a pick? take a swing at this game.
I'm sorry. I was on the phone with the 1-800 gambler.
What did they say? Who did they say to pick?
They said, you idiot, take Purdue. And I said, ain't no way I'm going Northwestern, baby.
Yeah, rare. Go Wildcats.
Okay, Ethan's on Purdue. Corey's on Northwestern.
No, he's on Northwestern.
No, he's not.
He said the number told him to take Purdue, and he said, I don't have that much of a problem. I'm taking Northwestern.
Okay. All right. You're both on freaking Northwestern. God, Purdue's really bad. Purdue's really, really bad.
And they're not happy right now either.
No, like Purdue is bordering on worst team in the Big Ten bad.
But what do you mean worst? They are the worst. They have one win. There's nobody else who has.
Then you know what? Let's make it a Big Banter Super Lock.
Okay.
We've had three Super Locks this year that have all been on games where we have said, don't touch it. It's disgusting. Never ever do it. We're 3-0 in those games. That's all I'm saying.
But this one takes, this is the, over the past 3 years, this is by far the grossest game that has ever been a Super Lock ever. And we're going to watch the heck out of it, baby. All right, let's keep it going before I throw up in my mouth. Your reigning national champion Michigan Wolverines host your current AP number one Oregon Ducks in Ann Arbor at 3:30 on CBS, where the spread is 14.5 in Oregon's direction. Ethan, drop some wisdom bombs. What do you think?
Michigan has gotten their collective act together a lot since the Texas game, which is the closest thing that you can compare this to. I just don't think they're quite ready to keep it within that number. Oh, the biggest issue for me is the time change. The biggest issue is Oregon sleepwalking into Michigan and being like, wait, we're playing a 3:30 kick Eastern time zone. What are we doing? Like, I want to take Oregon so bad because it feels like the right thing to do. Everyone is betting Oregon. The early betting is like 85% of the bets are on Oregon. And I just can't be that public. I can't do it. It goes against my nature. I'm going to throw up. Give me Michigan plus the points.
I'm going to go public here. I'm going to go Oregon. I do think the travel and the time zone change is going against them. Oregon has played both of their ranked matchups in Eugene and handled them handily, for lack of a better word. But I think Michigan was real juiced up for that Michigan State game. Like we said, they emptied the bag offensively. That team was juiced up and raring to go. I don't know if you can get that kind of energy 2 weeks in a row for a game that's not a rivalry game. I know it is the number one team in the country, so maybe they can get juiced up again. I don't know, but I'm just going to side with the better team here. I'm going to go Oregon.
I believe so far, I think I saw a stat posted on Twitter, and you guys can correct me if I'm wrong, but they are 0-for. The West Coast Big Ten teams are 0-for against the spread coming to the Eastern time zone. They have not covered once.
That's probably, that's a lot of USC though, unfortunately.
There's in the opposite direction, what, Indiana and Minnesota have both covered, and those are the only two that have done that?
Yeah, going out west, correct.
Yeah. America, Big Ten country, I'm about to do the one thing that you will never do if you are wagering of any sort of stature. I am going to bet with my heart, and I just feel a little bit good right now. I'm on my rivalry week high, and Michigan covers, and I will not elaborate any further than that. Next game on our docket,
You gotta UCLA. Tell no. Stop. You gotta tell the people what you truly believe. This is what this podcast is about. Stop it right now. He All already right, fine. Spoiled you wanna know, it for me. Come on.
Okay, fine. You wanna know why? I think Warren, it was garbage time, but he looked like he was putting some things together against Texas. With those last throws. And I don't know, I'm really encouraged. And I think if you can have some confidence in the quarterback play, that's going to bode well for the rest of your offense. And then also your defense too. And we've saw what this defense can do if they are not on the field 80% of the time. And it's a little bit of that bend, don't break. I hope and pray that Will Johnson comes back and plays, because then you'll at least have some star power on the outside to neutralize some of the big play capabilities that Oregon has, but then they'll just do it from somebody else.
Corey, are you picking Michigan to win?
Am I picking Michigan to win? I kind of want to, but I'm not gonna.
Corey.
Whoa, that is not what you told me. You need to tell the people what you truly think.
Yeah, Ethan, I said all sorts of things in that conversation in the car ride home. You know, I'm like, I'm feeling pretty good. You know what? Michigan, we're winning. It's the totally illogical. You're a fan at heart. That was my pick. And I'm like, you know what? By Saturday, I'm going to convince myself that Michigan's got a shot in this game. And then if they do, then I'm going to start talking real crazy and be like, what happens if we win out? What happens if we go Frosted Tips, Cade McNamara, and then we find our way into a tie-breaking situation where we get a fourth straight year in Indianapolis? But that's not happening.
I'm putting down Corey Michigan money line.
Okay, do it.
It's done. It's done. That's the pick. That's the official pick.
I'm so sorry that I made him do this. We need to move on.
Yeah, you made me do this. I was trying to keep this program going along. Okay, finally, UCLA travels to Nebraska, where the spread is in Nebraska 6.5. I'll take this one. You look at this line and you may say and give you a reason to not pick it, like, oh, Nebraska just lost a very emotional game in Columbus. So people who are just going to hammer this and say, yeah, this is a no-brainer. Yeah, it is a no-brainer. I don't care that they lost an emotional game. UCLA is bad. Nebraska wins by at least a touchdown.
I was very encouraged, more so than anything else in that Ohio State game, about the defensive prowess that Nebraska showed. They were so bad the week prior against Illinois, and that was part of my cap for that Nebraska Ohio State game, and why I picked Nebraska plus the points, because they couldn't do that same thing twice in a row. Now they might have played a little bit above their pay grade last week, but I'm going to be shocked if UCLA scores more than 14 points in this game. Give me Nebraska. I love your cap. I love your cap on the game, Corey, so I won't elaborate on that side of it. Give me Nebraska.
Back-to-back road games for UCLA. They've been playing better football, but that's too much for them to overcome. Give me Nebraska.
Super lock. All right, battle of 5-3 teams. Also a rivalry game, I believe. Wisconsin travels to Iowa, where the spread is Iowa -3, and the quarterback passing yards is 75.5. Just kidding, I made that up. Alex, you take the lead on this one. What you got?
I had a rule at the beginning of the year that I would always pick the opponent for Wisconsin to cover, because I thought Wisconsin sucked and had no identity. They are starting to have an identity. And they are going on the road, I know, but I'm going to take Wisconsin plus the points here. I think they just have a good thing going.
What was the spread? I'm sorry, I missed the number.
3.
Ugh. I really would love 4.5 or 3.5. Just feels like one of those games where the team that wins close. Ugh, I hate that it's at 3. What a good number. And by good, I mean bad. Give me Iowa. I'll take Iowa. I'll take a home favorite.
I think that this game will be a wash, but I'm not allowed to pick that. Or a push, excuse me. I'm so tired.
You can't. Whoa. You can pick push. You can. We will let you. But here's the problem with it. If it is a push, then you win, but both of us just get a tie. If either team covers, you lose.
You know what? Fine. I'm taking the push.
Okay. What an idiot.
I'm a dead last. What have I got to lose? You said this is a great line, therefore it's a bad line. So I was following your synopsis. It's like, oh, this is such a good line, which makes it terrible. So I'm like, oh, okay, I'm going to take the push.
I suppose if you look at my record for this year, that probably shows you're making a smart choice.
Yeah, there we go. While you guys are sitting with a wash, I'm sitting with a plus one in the win column, you idiots. Get on my level. All right. Last but not least, USC travels to Washington, 7:30 on the Big Ten Network. 7:30. This game should be at like 11. This is so stupid. USC is a 2.5-point favorite.
Pac 12 after dark.
Big Ten before midnight on the East Coast. Yeah. USC minus 2.5. Ethan, what do you say?
You said Washington?
USC travels to Washington.
It is in Washington. Oh, give me Washington. Give me Washington. Easy. Easy peasy lemon squeezy. This is my lock of the week. Washington, lock of the week.
Yeah, Washington's a different team at home. Give me Washington.
You know what, boys? Let's just round this episode up and make it another Big Ten super lock. I can't pick USC with the way that they've been playing in Washington. That stadium's so much fun. I really want to go sometime. Seattle's just a cool-looking town. So,
We missed a game. Indiana travels to Michigan State.
Oh, I forgot. Just like the AP poll forgot how to put an undefeated 8-win team in the top 10.
Did he do this on purpose? Was this a setup?
I guess we'll never know. Indiana 8-0 travels to Michigan State, 3:30 kick on Peacock, also forgotten network. Indiana's a 7.5-point favorite. I'll take this. Until Indiana proves to me otherwise that they won't blow out opponents, they're just going to keep doing it, I guess. And yeah, Indiana wins by 2 touchdowns.
Not only is Indiana undefeated, they are undefeated against the spread. That cannot keep happening. They have not lost against the spread, but it's going to happen for one more week. Give me Indiana minus the points.
I'm also taking Indiana. This is conditional on Rourke coming back. If Jackson is the quarterback, I am changing my pick to MSU.
Pony up. Get on the horse. End this episode with a Big Ten super line.
Get on the horse. We did it for the other game. You pony up and you ride that pony.
Alex, I took the push. You better pony up. Get your bread
up. Come on, get your bread up.
We ride.
Ladies and gentlemen, that is your picks for week 10.
All right. That's the episode, boys.
Folks, thank you for listening. We appreciate you. Check us out on all the socials. They will be linked. We love you. We appreciate you. We'll be back at it again next week, recapping all the games and giving you another episode of the picks. We love you. We'll see you soon. Peace.